Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pincham. I'll be reading summaries of some of the articles published by JNS Spine on August 16, 2013. The topics of the articles in this podcast are oncology, the cervical spine, and the thoracic spine. The pathophysiology of venous hypertensive myelopathy, study of an animal model. A laboratory investigation by Hong Chi Zhang and colleagues. The authors have established a rabbit model to investigate the pathophysiological changes of venous hypertensive myelopathy. In this randomized control animal study with blind evaluation, the model was developed by creating a renal artery to vein anastomosis and trapping of the posterior vena cava. Spinal function was evaluated, and at different stages after the procedure, the following were performed: abdominal aortic angiography, spinal MRI, and pathological examination of the spinal cord. The model animals had significantly decreased motor and sensory hind limb function and abnormality at the corresponding segments of the spinal cord. Pathological examination showed dilation and hyalinization of the small blood vessels, perivascular and intraparenchymal lymphocyte infiltration, proliferation of glial cells, and neuronal degeneration. Electron microscopic examination showed loose lamellar structure of the myelin sheath, increased number of mitochondria in the thin myelinated fibers, and pycnotic neurons. The authors note that this model has provided increased understanding of venous hypertensive myelopathy pathology and could help to improve the therapy of spinal vascular malformations. Desmoplastic fibroma of the spine, causing severe mediastinal compression and brachial plexus encasement. A report of two cases by Daryl Law and co-authors. Desmoplastic fibromas are extremely rare tumors, especially those originating from the spinal column. They are generally characterized as slow-growing. But in this case report, the authors describe two patients who harbored extremely aggressive spinal desmoplastic fibromas. Interestingly, the tumors in both patients encased the brachial plexus. In one patient, the tumor was so large that it caused significant compression of the mediastinal structures and eventually led to cardiopulmonary compromise. Hemi-clamshell thoracotomies were performed to expose and resect the tumors from the anterior spinal elements. Gross total resection was not attained in either patient. Because both patients were young, an effort was made to maximally debulk the tumor while avoiding injury or sacrifice of the encased nerves. In this article, the authors also highlight the clinical presentation, diagnostic modality, and treatment course for patients with desmoplastic fibroma originating from the spinal column. Complex regional pain syndrome following lateral lumbar interbody fusion. A case report by Simon Moore and Adam Cantor. Chronic regional pain syndrome, also known as reflex sympathetic dystrophy, has been reported following trauma and various surgical procedures. Chronic regional pain syndrome is diagnosed clinically using the Budapest criteria and is characterized by a non-radicular painful and/or burning sensation often associated with swelling in the affected region. The pathophysiology of reflex sympathetic dystrophy remains poorly understood. Neurological and rheumatological mechanisms have been proposed. nerve damage and torsion on the sympathetic trunk may play a role in post-surgical cases, but chronic regional pain syndrome associated with spine surgery remains rare. The authors report a case of chronic regional pain syndrome following a minimally invasive lateral trans-psoas approach to the lumbar spine, with placement of an interbody cage for fusion. The patient experienced spontaneous resolution of symptoms following conservative management. A causal mechanism may include the direct or indirect injury to adjacent neural tissues. In addition to the previously described risks associated with the trans-psoas approach, this case provides further cause for careful surgical technique and minimal tissue distraction when performing lateral trans-psoas procedures, especially at levels where the sympathetic trunk is in close proximity to the surgical corridor. The use of cooled saline during bone drilling to reduce the incidence of upper limb palsy after cervical laminoplasty. A clinical article by Shota Takanaka and co-workers. The goal of this study was to determine whether the use of cooled irrigation saline during bone drilling can reduce the incidence of upper limb palsy after cervical laminoplasty. Cervical laminoplasty is a well-established procedure, but C5 palsy persists as a notorious complication. The authors propose that the friction-generated heat from a high-speed drill results in thermal damage to nerve roots and causes the upper limb palsy. This represents the thermal damage theory. Accordingly, the authors hypothesized that cooling of the irrigation saline may prevent postoperative upper limb palsy by keeping the temperature low during the bone drilling. Two procedures were administered to 159 patients. In the first, irrigation saline was used at room temperature during operation of half of the patients. In the second procedure, the authors used cooled irrigation saline during operation of the other half of the patients. The authors used a handheld dynamometer to precisely assess the upper limb muscle strength in the two groups, before and 2 weeks after surgery. A multivariate analysis indicated that room temperature saline, female sex, and open gutter side were significant predictors for a decrease in arm strength. The authors call this the irrigation effect. In conclusion, cooling of the irrigation saline during bone drilling is cheap, effective, and easy to perform, and requires no special apparatus. The authors recommend the use of cooled irrigation saline as the best way to prevent upper limb palsy after laminoplasty. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.